Welcome to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast updating you on the latest IT news to come out of Redmond. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, and I thank you for downloading and listening to this show. In this week's episode, Microsoft ends its support for Java Virtual Machine, and IE8 gets delivered through WSUS at the end of August, ISIS server only gets half-patched, and IT salaries get pinched in 2009 according to one survey. We'll get right to it after this quick musical interlude right here on Redmond Radio. Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. And as always, I welcome your feedback on the show at mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105media.com. And I'd certainly love to hear from you, so feel free to send me an email or you can even record a quick message at 949-265-1564. I've got some good news for those of you who prefer to automatically download the show via iTunes. For the time being, I'm continuing to host the show at redmondradio.podbean.com. This means that iTunes downloaders just need to go to that site and click on the Subscribe with iTunes button that shows up on the right side of the column on that page. Once you're in iTunes, you do need to configure the subscription settings so that it downloads as many shows as you want to hear in one sitting, of course. The Podbean version of the show always includes more information, and once in a while I'll announce contests that are only available by looking at the description page at redmondradio.podbean.com. If you're listening out there, spread the word. The more listeners, the merrier. Okay, before we continue, once again, I'd like to offer my apologies for not posting an episode for a while. I've been knee-deep in salary surveys and just finished researching and writing up one for Redmond Channel Partner. That issue will publish around the August timeframe in a couple of weeks. Some interesting info is that there's basically a mixed bag with salaries and raises up, but bonuses were down due mainly because of the recession. Not very surprising, of course, but I'm also working on the Redmond Salary Survey now, which will appear around the September timeframe. We're just locking in that data as we speak, though, and I'm anticipating that the results will be mirroring essentially what RCP reports somewhat. Also, I have an mcpmag.com survey that looks specifically at MCP data. It's kind of like the same survey you've seen every year, but this one is a slightly different because we're looking only at certification information. All right. Since we've been off for a few weeks, let's just round up some news items from the last couple of weeks. First up, Microsoft gave notice a couple of weeks ago that it removed 10 security patch downloads, all associated with the Microsoft Java Virtual Machine technology. Patch downloads were removed from several bulletins, and some of those bulletins date back about 9 years. The bulletins addressed bugs that could use Java-based applets to take over a workstation after a visitor goes to a malicious website. The JVM technology that was being patched affected older operating systems such as Windows 95 and older web browsers like Internet Explorer 5. Microsoft originally licensed its JVM technology from Sun Microsystems. Redmond now no longer supports JVM technology, which ended June 30, 2009, according to the security bulletins and a Microsoft support page. The discontinuance of support for Microsoft JVM technology comes a little more than 2 months after Oracle agreed to buy Sun Microsystems. If the deal passes the approval process, Oracle might consolidate some of Sun's Java-based tools. Java itself likely won't be affected by the deal. Sun placed most of the Java programming language under the open-source New General Public License. A few weeks ago, Microsoft reported that it's planning to deliver Internet Explorer 8 via Windows Support Update Services starting August 25th. The service will update older Microsoft browsers such as IE 6 or 7 on August 25th or thereafter. The update only works with Windows OSs that support IE 8, such as Windows Vista and XP, along with Windows Server 2008 and Server 2003. Those running Windows 7 release candidates likely won't be affected by the WSUS update because Microsoft typically doesn't update test versions of its products in that way. WSUS is a free Windows Server add-on for getting Windows product updates in environments where multiple PCs are managed. Microsoft provided notes for IT organizations that want to delay upgrading to IE8 via WSUS. Basically, turn off automatic update in WSUS server before August 25th. Alternatively, if it's after August 25th, organizations can synchronize the WSUS server and reject the IE8 update. Organizations that maintain legacy web-based applications using older browsers typically might delay getting the IE8 upgrade. The upgrade can be blocked either through WSUS or Microsoft System Center Management products. WSUS shouldn't be confused with Windows Update and Microsoft Update. Those services typically deliver updates to individual Windows users either by requested download or automatically. Microsoft announced pricing for its Windows Azure Cloud Computing Service last week at its Worldwide Partner Conference in New Orleans. Windows Azure Cloud Computing Services are currently available for free to participants in Microsoft's Community Technology Preview Program. The company plans to start offering commercial services on a pay-as-you-go basis when the Microsoft Professional Developers Conference begins in late November. Microsoft also plans to offer a promotional discount to its partners of 5% on Windows Azure Compute, SQL Azure, and .NET services, which are all part of the Windows Azure platform. In addition, the company is planning a development accelerator promotional offer that will provide a deep discount to partners and customers who want to quickly develop and deploy hosted applications on the platform. The pricing details are described in Microsoft's Windows Azure team blog. A more detailed analysis of the cloud computing platform with explanations about how Windows Azure services are priced is provided in a July white paper by David Chappelle entitled Windows Azure and ISVs, available in a PDF. In that PDF, Chappelle argues that cloud computing platforms such as Microsoft's Windows Azure are typically needed by software distributors that deliver applications to their customers via software as a service. Those thinking about hosting their website using Windows Azure likely will find Windows Azure service to be an expensive overkill, according to a Microsoft Developer Network forum post. Chappelle explains in his white paper that Microsoft's Windows Azure pricing is based on three basic variables: compute time, data storage and access, and bandwidth transferred in and out. Microsoft will charge 12 cents per hour for compute time, 15 cents per gigabyte of storage per month, and 1 cent per 10,000 operations on that stored data, according to Chappelle. The bandwidth charge is 10 cents per gigabyte moving in and 15 cents per gigabyte moving out. There appears to be a way for customers to remove compute instances to limit compute time charges, according to a discussion on the MSDN forum. In addition to the above charges, if customers use the platform's SQL Azure relational database for storage, they will get charged by how much data is stored, plus bandwidth costs. There are two SQL Azure options, a web edition and a business edition. The web edition costs $9.99 per month for up to 1 gigabyte of storage, with a max query time of 10 hours. The business edition costs $99 per month for 10 gigabytes of storage, with a max query of 100 hours. Microsoft last Tuesday announced volume licensing program changes that supposedly simplify matters for IT shops as well as hosting providers. Most of the changes are described in a Microsoft-produced Q&A with Joe Matz, Corporate Vice President of Worldwide Licensing and Pricing at Microsoft. One of those new programs is called Microsoft Enrollment for Application Platform. It will bundle licensing for the following products: SQL Server, BizTalk Server, Office SharePoint Server, Visual Studio, and Dynamics XRM. This particular licensing option will be available on October 1st. Another new licensing program is called Microsoft Enrollment for Core Infrastructure. This program, which will also be available on October 1st, offers a package that includes Windows Server, System Center for Server Management, and Forefront Client Security. Matz claims that this program simplifies licensing for customers because Microsoft will charge just on a per-process basis. The new enrollment software licensing packages will be offered through Microsoft's Enterprise Agreement Program. IT shops that choose EA licensing face some complicated decision-making, though, depending on the fine print, according to Paul DeGroote, Research Vice President and Channel Licensing Strategies Analyst at Directions in Microsoft. In addition, EAP will require adding the software assurance option to the licensing plan. While EAP licensing could save organizations money, much depends on their upgrade plans further down the road. He also noted that EAP licensing will work better for IT shops that use all Microsoft products. It might not be the licensing option of choice for those wanting to use a mix of Microsoft, Linux-based, and Oracle solutions, for instance. But IT shops that don't spend much on servers may not meet the initial purchase requirements of EAP licensing anyways, he added. EAP is actually an improvement over an older application program platform agreement, which wasn't sold through Microsoft's partner channel, DeGroote explained. Microsoft's clarification of an Internet Security and Acceleration Server patch released this month has left at least one security expert stumped. The heart of the matter involves Security Advisory 973-472, which was released on Monday of last week. That bulletin describes possible vulnerabilities affecting Redmond's ISA server, specifically an ActiveX bug associated with Office Web Components. That security advisory should not be confused with the ISA server fix associated with a Radius one-time password setting that was addressed in the July security patch released on Tuesday. The important part seems to be how OWC is used in ISA server, according to David Cross, a product unit manager at Microsoft's Server Products Division. Quote, as many customers have noticed, ISA Server 2004 and ISA Server 2006 were included in the security advisory on the Applies To product list. That's what Cross said in a Forefront team blog while noting that ISA Server 2000 and Forefront Threat Management Gateway aren't included. Cross goes on to say that the OWC vulnerability affecting ISA Server can be mitigated as ISA report generation does not use the vulnerable OWC code path. If you're still confused, you're not alone. According to Eric Schultz, Chief Technology Officer at Shavlik Technologies, in an email, David's webpage seems pretty confusing. He tries to say the servers aren't vulnerable, but at the same time, he says putting in the mitigation doesn't break anything. I read this and I'm not sure what his real recommendation is, he said. Schultz said Tuesday's ISA server patch pertained to a scenario involving password breaches, provided the ISA server was configured specifically for Radius 1 time password parameters. That issue, after applying Tuesday's patch, is presumably resolved, but the OWC problem is still up in the air, apparently. Schultz added, the OWC patch is simply a bad control. If you're sitting on the ISA server and you browse to an evil web page and view an Excel workbook that's evil via the OWC control, the attacker can run code on the system. The ISA server can't be exploited unless someone at the ISA control goes to an evil web page to view the file in question. End quote. How about one more item before we hit a break? At WPC last week, Microsoft introduced a new professional level certification for Windows 7 that adds a twist to an existing title. The MCITP Enterprise Desktop Support Technician 7, or MCITP EDS-T7, resembles its MCITP Enterprise Desktop Support Administrator counterpart, but requires candidates pass one or two hardware-based exams from the Help Desk Institute. According to a Born to Learn blog post, the upcoming MCITP EDST-7 title tests a candidate's skills to implement Windows 7 and the ability to deliver those skills in a customer service environment. Candidates have to pass two Microsoft exams, 7680 TS Windows 7 Configuring, and then 7685 Pro Windows 7 Enterprise Desktop Support Technician. Candidates then need to pass one of two HDI exams, HDI Support Center Analyst or HDI Desktop Support Technician. These exams were developed by the Help Desk Institute to test knowledge of hardware implementation and soft skills, such as proper problem resolution, as well as the fundamentals of help desk support. What makes the MCITP EDS-T7 certification unique is that it's the first time Microsoft has made an external program's certification programs a requirement for obtaining an MCP credential. Exam 7680 went live last week. 7685 is expected later this year. We'll continue with more news in a second. Let's break for this message from 1105 Media and Mimosa Systems. Check out this webcast, Why You Need to Focus on Proactive E-Discovery Strategies Now. Organizations that do not proactively and efficiently preserve business records in email, SharePoint, or on-file servers run the enormous risk of adverse legal judgments, exploitation of evidence, fines, and negative PR. Attend this webcast with speaker Michael Osterman at Osterman Research, who explains why you need to proactively archive electronic content and how you can start doing so as soon as possible. Register at ad.vu.hvwn. That's ad.vu/HV as in Victor, WN as in November. And welcome back to Redmond Radio. We'll close out with a couple of surveys here. The general economic downturn is leaving its mark on IT salaries, according to an independent study released a couple of weeks ago. Janko Associates issued its 2009 mid-year IT salary survey, which compared salaries in June with those in January of 2008. The mean salary in mid-sized enterprises decreased 0.6% over that 18-month period, $73,439 in June versus $73,905 in January of 2008. Those working in large enterprises showed a 0.2% increase in salary over that six-month period. The mean salary was $81,652 in June versus 81,475 in January. Genco Associates didn't perform a direct year-to-year comparison because that's tricky to do with mid-year statistics, according to Victor Janalitis, Genco's CEO. However, the company plans to do a direct year-to-year comparison next time in January, he said. Quote, this year is a disaster, Janalitis said. Businesses have gone away, IT contractors have been cut, and people who would retire are staying in the workforce longer because their retirement savings have been eroded, he explained. The cuts have affected IT planners and their support staff, help desk personnel, and quality control and training employees, among others. Those who earned big salaries weren't spared. The study found that more than 200 IT pros in New York City making six-figure incomes are seeking work as the result of being laid off or because of bankruptcies and mergers. In addition to finding decreased securities, the study concluded that demand for IT pros has decreased overall. The Genco Associates study surveyed 28,869 people in mid-sized companies and 22,368 people in large companies. The study defined a large company as having more than $500 million in annual revenue, with a mid-sized company defined as having more than $125 million in annual revenue. IT purchasing has been so bad recently that things have got to be looking up. That's the optimistic part of a Forrester research report published a few weeks ago that chronicles new lows in the global and U.S. IT spending patterns. The upshot of the report, which is called U.S. and Global IT Market Outlook Q2 2009, is that across-the-board purchasing of IT goods and services will improve late this year. Said the report's author, Andrew Bartels, in a telephone interview, the dramatic decline in tech purchases during the past three quarters has really set the stage for an upturn, and in fact it has been so bad that it is good. The fourth quarter of 2008 and the first two quarters of this year have created a very low base from which the market can make a significant rebound. Businesses have been stretching the life of PCs for various reasons, including dissatisfaction with Vista, said Bartels, who's vice president and principal analyst at Forrester. But times change everything. Now, with the economic conditions improving, an aging PC inventory and a new OS called Windows 7 in the wings, companies are going to rev up their PC capital expenditures, he explained. The lack of access to capital has shut out spending plans at many companies, and currency fluctuations have added to the general uncertainty, according to the report. Overall purchases of IT goods and services will decline by nearly 11% in 2009. The spending outlook for the U.S. IT market will decline by 5.1% year over year. Forrester's previous forecast had underestimated the spending decline in 2009, projecting just a 3% decrease globally and a 3.1% drop in the U.S. IT market. The report expects declines in all sectors of the tech market, except for outsourcing. In 2009, outsourcing will rise by 2%. And in our last news item, given today's tight economy and growing unemployment figures, some of the latest news on the IT staffing front, which could see a tiny rise in IT hiring, is welcome news. Other news, such as the decline in overall compensation, is less encouraging. The quarterly CIO hiring forecast from IT staffing specialist Robert Half Technology surveys more than 1,400 North American CIOs to get a feel for their hiring expectations. The latest report shows respondents are surprisingly sanguine. Slightly less than one-tenth, at 8%, of IT chiefs expect to add IT workers during the coming quarter, while 6% anticipate cutting their staffing levels. That makes for a net 2% uptick in IT hiring, basically the same as Robert Half's Q2 report. The overwhelming majority of CIOs, 85%, don't plan to make any changes to their staffing levels. Intriguingly, about one-fifth of IT chiefs plan to augment their IT staffs by hiring a mix of full-time and contract or project workers. Full-time IT workers who are most actively sought after include those at the staff level, those without managerial aspirations, for example, with up to 5 years of experience. Nearly 9 in 10 CEOs cited this requirement, according to Robert Half. An additional one-fifth of IT decision-makers said that they're mulling plans to hire IT workers at the manager, senior manager, or director levels. Among CIOs who expect to trim their staffing levels in Q3, 41% cited IT budget cuts as the primary culprit. Just over 37% cited company-wide layoffs, while one-seventh cited IT project freezes. The IT skills most in demand include network administrators, which was cited by 69% of IT chiefs, followed by Windows admin experience, according to 68%. Similarly, IT chiefs ranked networking as the fastest growing job sector at 16%, followed by help desk and technical support at 15%, and application development by 11%. And believe it or not, that's it for this week. Thanks to all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, and especially those who pass this show on to their colleagues. I'm Michael Domingo. I'll chat with you next week here on Redmond Radio.